What's up, everybody? This is What's Up Wall Street. I'm the host, CJ Email. Our guest today is Kenny Anderson. He is in charge of the student department at the LSU Incubator Program. He's been doing it for quite some time, and this podcast wouldn't be possible without a lot of his help. So I definitely wanted to reach out to him and just kind of have a conversation with him. He had some interesting topics about starting businesses, and I think it's going to be an intriguing conversation for anyone who wants to start their own business, ever wondered what it takes to start a business and run a business. We go into funding and also just being creative and just analyzing your market, all kinds of things. And it was a really awesome conversation, and I'm glad we had it. So I hope you guys enjoy it. This is What's Up Wall Street. And boom, we're rolling.
All right.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming in, sitting down with me, and having this podcast. We already got the coffee brewing for me because I'm trying to.
Perfect.
But it reminded me of that, what we were talking about a couple days ago with Aquium, I believe it's called.
Aquium.
Aquium, yep. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, just as a tidbit, I guess, to add on to this topics that we're going to be talking about, just student businesses in general that are kind of, I guess, shaking up the way we think of products, really. I mean, just enhancing them, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, they're an interesting company. They're not students, actually. They're
okay.
They're a...
Were they once students, though? Did they start out as students?
No, they didn't start as students. The developer was a guy that came up with the actual formulation for the water. That he was some kind of scientist. The formulation for the mineral water that works well with coffee. And actually now they've got a market for that. They've done a good job, but they're focusing on a bottling facility for water now called with those Tetra Pak things.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to now box water at a facility. They're trying to raise money for that. And they're a finalist in that Pitch BR thing too, which is during Baton Rouge Entrepreneurship Week.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to go see them pitch downtown, along with two other people. So
nice. Yeah. And I mean, so what is their, do you know what their goal is overall? I mean, I know that it's it's certainly an intriguing kind of idea since one of their selling points is that 98% of coffee is water.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to make something that is, I guess, more nutritional value in water.
It's all about the flavor and the taste. It's water with some specific minerals and things in it that is supposed to take some of the bitterness out of coffee. And it's formulated water for brewing coffee. So that's their main product. That's their bread and butter.
Do you know if they particularly are doing any type of student internships, or are they doing anything with involved in students or LSU at all?
Not a whole lot, only because they're kind of at a money raising stage right now. If this Tetra Pak bottling plant happened, there may be some opportunities, but I can't speak on their behalf on that too much. But no students right now. No, not much student involvement with those guys.
I'm gonna use that as a transition.
Yeah, perfect.
With funding, because that's something I talked about with Natalie Noel in my last podcast.
Mm-hmm.
About just that phase of becoming an entrepreneur and overcoming that funding phase.
Yeah.
What is your, I guess, advice, or what's your opinions on that, or how would you go about funding if you were someone trying to start a business as a student?
It can be tough down here. It's hard for students to raise money. It's hard for students to get bank loans also, you know, without collateral and money down and all that. We do see some students that are getting close to investor ready, but that's also a tough thing, you know. When it comes to institutional investors, they want to see a track record and they want a return. So a lot of times it's hard for us to put students in front of those guys, and they don't really exist here. You know, we're not Silicon Valley or New York or anything like that. So it's hard to raise money down here. Honestly, I've seen students kind of take advantage of the good old boy network and raise money kind of over handshake deals.
Right.
But I've seen students do that with multiple different funding sources like in one round. And I mean, it's more informal than other places, but it still happens. You know, I had a 20-year-old student raise over $100,000 from multiple different just high net individuals in Baton Rouge. So that happens. We have a couple of venture capital funds, Innovation Catalyst over at the Tech Park. We'll talk to people. They're a nonprofit venture capital, so they're a little bit different. But they do, you know, $50,000 to $250,000 investments. They've done quite a few. So we have resources like that. And then, of course, we have like our venture challenge where we give away money to students. And that's $25,000. You know, it's not all the money in the world, but if the students can leverage that money to get closer to their actual funding goal, you know, we've seen students that we give $7,000, $10,000, $12,000 to, and they go use that to raise 100. So if they can leverage things like that, you know, there's always friends, family, and fools also. If they can raise a little bit of kind of bridge money to get to that next point is usually where we see them go out and be able to raise something. The other option is to, you know, pull some collateral together and get some money down and go get a bank loan. So,
yeah, and there's so many, I mean, there's so many resources out there for students that I think a lot of students that want to do their own, start their own businesses and just figure out where they're going as far as being an entrepreneur, it seems like a lot. I mean, like all the things that you just listed, I feel like the majority of students don't know that they exist. So where is a good place that a student could start as far as, you know, starting their own business and finding resources and things?
It's funny because funding is definitely one of the hardest things. So don't let that deter you right off the bat, because that's a hard step for anybody, student or non-student.
Right.
But as far as LSU students, in the time that I've been here, there's probably more going on with regards to entrepreneurship right now than any time. They just raised a lot of money, and they just launched a new entrepreneurship major. So they now have a BS in entrepreneurship. They also have a minor. The minor's been around for a couple of years, but the curriculum is really, really expanded with regards to entrepreneurship. They're popping up across departments, you know, the music department, art department, technical fields, engineering, things like that. There's entrepreneurship classes popping up. And the degree itself is a paired degree, so it's got to be with another major. So, I mean, you could do electrical engineering and entrepreneurship alongside of each other. And so they're really excited to get students into that track. But, you know, on top of that, they have a SEI Fellows program. We've got my student incubator program. We run an NSF iCore site that we're doing a student-only cohort actually right now. We have session number 2 tonight. So this is kind of a guinea pig round for that. But we're going to have more student-only cohorts for that too. So there's a lot of resources for students right now. Really, if you just Google LSU entrepreneurship or the student incubator or anything like that, come talk to a lot of these different people involved. They just hired a brand new person, Franz Lorke, up from Birmingham, and he runs the Stevenson Entrepreneurship Institute now. So he's in charge of the Fellows program, which is a year-long appointment, kind of the cream of the crop entrepreneurs. So you can get involved in that. You can absolutely get involved with me in the program out here. We work really closely with all those guys on campus. So if you go talk to one of them, you're going to hear about all the rest of us. So the entrepreneurship, we all are on the same page. It's nice because it's kind of been all over the place in the past, you know. There's little nodes that people are doing things in, but now they're kind of all coming together, and it seems like a network that makes sense. So if you go talk to one of them, you're going to get the whole spiel on all the resources available for students. But if you're a student looking for any of these resources, you know, go talk to somebody at the university or myself, and we'll get you pointed in the right direction, because they have scholarship money. They've got a lot of things going on for student entrepreneurs.
Great. And what specifically, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, like your role specifically and, you know, what you do, I guess, on a day-to-day and, and the incubator program?
So I'm in charge of the student incubator program here at the Innovation Park. So we have been a full-service kind of traditional business incubator since 1988. We started off on campus, moved out here to this site on Innovation Park Drive in 2005. And so we have office and lab space out here, and we have business counselors, and we have a bunch of resources for small businesses, and we have tenants that actually rent space from us. So we're kind of a real incubator out here. Most of these companies are headquartered out here. But basically, we offer the same resources and same services to student companies without having to come out here and rent space. So again, we understand that most students don't have a lot of capital to get these things started. So you can come out here and take advantage of us as consultants. I've got grad students, we've got engineering interns, we've got a prototyping center, we've got PR interns, we've got space to rent, we've got rooms that you can book for free to do conferences and stuff like this room. And then we have like the ancillary business services. You know, you can send and receive mail, you can, our secretary can answer the phones, copy machines and all things like that. But really the advantage for students is in the consulting resources. You can get all that free of charge. We've seen myself and the three other consultants here have been around for quite a while. Those other guys have about 20 years combined out here. So, you know, we've seen all aspects of the entrepreneurial process, you know, with all different size companies. And so, you know, with the students, I was telling them that no idea is too early stage. You know, we've had students that thought of an idea yesterday and end up prototyping it into an actual product and then finding a manufacturer overseas and making an inventory order and coming up with another product and building a real company around this. So we see it at all different stages, but really my role is as a program director for the students and then as a business consultant, actually, you know, boots on the ground with the grad assistants and the rest of the people helping these guys at whatever stage they're at. And, you know, there's not requirements and milestones and things. You know, we want to step in at whatever point you're at and help you out with whatever challenges you're facing and get you to where you want to be. So we have a lot of resources. We have an active board of directors with deans, entrepreneurs, business owners out here that we can tap into. So that's a good resource for students also. But really, you know, we work on your timeline. You know, we want motivated students. We're not going to bother you, but we're here if you need us. So, lots of resources, though, for
sure. Yeah, to me, that's honestly really incredible. I mean, I think anybody who's a business student or is thinking about starting their own business, it's you're talking about so much money savings as far as consulting and you guys provide.
If we can't provide the specific resource, you know, we're not attorneys, we're not CPAs, but we have those people in our network and on our board that we can get students in touch with also. And the nice part about the student program is it's open to all grade levels, all departments. You know, we love students that are not business students, honestly. I mean, yeah. We like to see engineering students that solve problems, that have something that could maybe be commercialized. And, you know, we have people from, you know, we've worked with high school students to freshmen to PhD candidates. You know, we have students across the board, so it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely still learning, like, with this Aquium thing, that not all these businesses in here are not student organizations. So it's
most of the people that rent space are not students.
Right.
So if you rent office or lab space from one of the places out here, you're traditionally an incubator company rather than a student company. But a lot of them hire student interns, and a lot of them pretty involved with students. So yeah, you walk around here and you can see people doing stuff.
Yeah, and are you guys trying to hit a goal, or do you have like minimums to hit with like the funding of LSU, or how does that work?
We don't get any money from LSU. So our goal is we got to keep it filled out here, because rent money is a big part of our revenue out here. So we've got to keep the space filled. Like, for example, we've got General Informatics downstairs, a great company that's been around for a while. They've been here for 10 years, I think. They're building that big building at Highland over on Highland and Bluebonnet over there. And so they're moving out probably after the new year, and they have a whole wing downstairs, multiple offices over there, and, you know, 40, 50 employees. So we've got to renovate and sell that space once they leave. So we need a stream and a pipeline of entrepreneurs to keep the space filled. But, you know, our average length of stay is about 3.5 years, but it depends on what the company needs and what stage they're at. You know, like Gen Info downstairs has been providing IT services to a lot of our other tenants and things like that. So we kind of call them an anchor tenant. But as far as goals for the innovation park, you know, we want tenants. We own all this property out here. You know, we want to get some buildings built and things eventually, make it more of a traditional university research park. But yeah, we need to keep the space filled for sure.
Yeah, and as far as you and your story, I was it was probably 2 years ago. I was listening to your little background story and kind of like what you're doing in the incubator program. Yeah. And I honestly, that like really inspired me. Awesome. So, you know, if you could kind of touch on that and I could go into it, but I think you tell the story much better.
I'm originally from Michigan, from Northern Michigan. And when I was 15, I had this idea to start basically a floating food truck.
15?
Yep. Yep. Couldn't even drive. My mom had to drive us around when we first started.
Wow.
But, so I bought an old used pontoon boat and went through all the health department regulations and everything, and I opened this little business. Had a partner for a couple of years, ended up buying him out, and so then I hired just employees for the rest of the time. I had a great employee that worked with me for a long time, but we ran that business for 7 years and then ended up selling it to an incoming freshman at the time that I ended up leaving town. And it's now changed hands twice, but it's still up there. It's kind of a staple in the community. Everybody loves it. It's called Two Guys and a Grill when I had it. But that kind of just got the entrepreneurial thing started with me. You know, I borrowed a little bit of money, I think $1,500 from my parents, paid them back the first year. And then we would make enough money doing this that I wouldn't have to work in the off season up there in Michigan. You know, it's only about a 3 month season, but I'd work in the summer and then wouldn't have to work in my undergrad the rest of the year. So we made a lot of money doing it. But yeah, then when I got down here, I saw what Charlie, our director, and the incubator and everything was doing at LSU. And I immediately got involved as a grad student when I was doing my MBA here. And so we have MBA graduate students all the time. I've got two right now. Usually we have three or four. But yeah, I've got two good ones right now, Will and David. And so it was a great grad student experience also. You know, a lot of people work up in the MBA office or something, but out here, you're in client meetings. You get to deal with clients who are actually doing things, you know, raising money, writing business plans, coming up with marketing plans, doing legal stuff. And so I immediately got involved in that when I got down here as a grad student, and that kind of turned into this role. But it's been interesting. You know, it's just, it's different every day. And, you know, I could write a book on probably what not to do as you know, an entrepreneur at different stages. But
the list is long.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of good stuff. I mean, it's just awesome to see people, you know, start at idea stage a lot of times and turn it into something profitable. And that's what, you know, with my business, even though it's just a little food boat, you know, I remember being out there the first couple of days and making some money and just thinking it was awesome that people were willing to pay for something that I came up with. You know, I built this thing from nothing and people are willing to pay for it. So it's a good feeling. And I like seeing that happen to students also. The Venture Challenge is a lot of fun. The pitch competition that we have every spring, we raise the $25,000. It's you know, not state money, not university money. It's money we raise from entrepreneurs who care about helping student businesses here. So we've given away $150,000 since this started.
Wow.
And, you know, this is really there's no red tape. It's the student's capital. That's how we want it to be. But all of them that we funded, for the most part, a good percentage of them, I guess I should say, have stuck around and, you know, used the money how they need to put it back into their business. And a lot of them are, we have countless success stories from that. So that's what I like to see, you know. If we can get a student a little bit of capital to kind of get them to the next step, a lot of this stuff turned into a reality. So we've got a good track record with it too.
Are you still kind of in the frame of mind every now and then, like, you know, ooh, I could join in that business? Or
that's kind of the thing that when people get successful, we keep in touch with a lot of them. But, you know, a lot of them are here for, you know, 6 months, a year, and they get a lot done and then they move on. And, you know, one of them eventually may be an interesting enough one that, you know, some of us would follow it. Definitely like seeing that. Definitely like having that as an opportunity, just seeing all these successful people around us all the time. Sometimes they leave us in the dust, you know? They're successful.
They just
and we're
leave
still
y'all
here.
Leave y'all behind. They leave the nest.
But no, it's fun. We like to, that's what we like to see.
Are you involved in any businesses right now? Or
no, not outside of this relationship, you know? Yes, involved with a lot of them, but not outside
not
of
ownership
role.
Of
no.
any
nope
so you know, with all these student businesses starting, honestly, not even just student businesses, just businesses in the area, do you think this trend is kind of happening nationwide and it's becoming like more, I guess, desensitized, I guess what is the word I'm looking for, where it's not so many big companies kind of owning all the market share and it's becoming more split up and broken apart to where it's almost like each, I guess it couldn't be everything, right? Like Amazon controls all the delivery services, mm-hmm. delivery services, and, you know, other, I guess, like Walmart. Well, now Amazon, of course, is kind of taking over that grocery thing, too. Yeah. It's like they're slowly taking that over, too.
Yeah, but Walmart does the pickup now. You can have them order it, then go pick it up on the side.
Yeah. And so what I guess I'm saying is it's becoming less big companies and becoming smaller companies that are doing services for the community, and they're making their money that way, and it's kind of becoming that way all over. Do you think that's kind of the trend, or do you think it's still going towards big business?
I think it's kind of both, but I think that it's easier to start a small company that solves a problem now. I don't want to talk specifically about companies with products, but we've seen a lot just how the prototyping process has evolved. We have a prototyping lab that we've had open for almost 3 years now. We've got 2 3D printers and a CNC mill and a CAD machine. CNC machine. And we have engineers that can CAD and design pretty much anything. But, you know, it used to be you'd have to get molds built. You'd have to wait for the molds to get built. You have to wait for your actual product to come through the molds and then get to you. If something's wrong, you got to send it back. That's 3 weeks added, maybe new molds. And those things are big dollars. And, you know, now that we have these 3D printers and stuff, we have some of our tenants who used to have to rely on plastics companies in the U.S. or overseas to come up with one prototype and, you know, again, wait for all the shipping times and everything. Now they can run down the hall and print this part in the same day. Right. So, I mean, we've seen a lot of other people that, you know, come up with something that is truly a prototype that's never been built before. You used to have to go contract somebody to build you one to see if it was feasible or not. Now you can build one with, you know, moving parts that you can use from a 3D printer for $200 or so out here. Our prices are pretty cheap for students, especially for those prototyping resources, which is great. Our average prototype cost is $250 or less. And I mean, it used to be thousands. And so that has really changed things, because if you get a prototype and go through a couple iterations and come up with something that you think can be commercialized, you know, you can send that prototype directly to a manufacturer overseas and order some inventory. You know, usually you can now have 200 units of inventory over here for cheaper than you used to be able to make one. So, you know, they used to say that one product is not a company. But, you know, now we've seen people start a company. I think that, you know, to grow and to make it a real company, you do need more than one. But we've seen a lot of people start and, you know, build something around one product. And then, you know, if they're doing it full time, they stick with it and hopefully can launch some follow on things. Like we had a really successful company build a product and then have an app that supplemented the product. So it's kind of like the razor blade model.
Right.
They sold the product and that was kind of a one time purchase. But in order to use it effectively, you had to continue to buy the app. So
yeah, and that kind of reminds me of Natalie's deal with the Healing Soul. I mean, yep. They have one product, but it's becoming a branched out thing where they're going to start using that same idea in mm-hmm. different style of shoes.
Exactly.
Building a company around that idea. which it was funny because she was talking about just, it's a different space whenever you're talking about solving a problem, like how her Healing Soul does versus creating an image, which mm-hmm. is kind of the other conflict in making a shoe. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, the other thing I think is something that we should bring up is the app creation here. Mm-hmm. That's another big part of what you guys do, since that's a pretty big space now with, you know, smartphones, of course. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. We see a lot of students and non-students that have app ideas. good ones and bad ones, of course. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to fund and develop an app with some traditional developers sometimes, just because it's so capital intensive in the beginning.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that, right? You would think it would be pretty. It's not material, so
I know.
You would think it would be.
And you know, it's not something that it all relies on users. So if you don't get users or somebody else, you know, it's tough to protect those ideas a lot of times too. So if a larger company, you get on their radar and they just build the same thing. No, they don't have to buy you out. They just build one on their own and they come squash you. So unfortunately, we've seen that happen. But, you know, our goal is for students to approach these things as more of a low risk startup. You know, maybe partner with somebody from computer science who can actually code. Find a technical co-founder. And even if up front you can't pay them, you have to give them some equity of the company or something. If they will code the whole thing and build it for you, it's worth it. And so, you know, that's the thing that we just don't want to see students do, is put a bunch of capital into an app idea and not know the market. You know, if they've talked to customers and they have a pretty solid plan of obtaining users and marketing it, then, you know, it's okay to green light and move forward sometimes on even a capital intensive project. But if you can find a technical co-founder in the beginning and have somebody on your team that can code and do the technical side of an app, it's always much lower risk.
How many apps do you guys have going on right now? App ideas, I guess.
I don't even know. We've got a lot of students who are trying to do apps. As far as actually in development, we've probably got less than five. But
is the development stage the hardest one to get to, or is it?
I think finding that person. If you're not going to just go hire a developer, you know, pay him top dollar,
right,
a boutique development company, finding that technical co-founder is probably the hardest part around here, I would think. If you don't have him, you probably have to raise some money, especially as a student. So that is a tough part also, because it's tough to raise money for an app. Again, it's just, you got to know the market.
Yeah, that's another thing I keep referencing to the podcast, but that's another thing I talked to Natalie about, is the software. I mean, it's becoming every single part of really pretty much every major, pretty almost every industry that I could
think
of.
There's applications for it everywhere.
Software.
Mm-hmm.
And software development. And I think someone who is remotely interested in computers, as you know, a student, I would say software development would be probably the way to go. I mean, there's a lot of need for it. There's a high demand for it.
Coders are very valuable.
Yeah, for sure.
LSU's got a lot of computer science students, so we've had some luck in the past by making some connections between our students who are looking for a technical partner, can tap into some of the computer science students and you can get them to work for you. That's usually what we shoot for, rather than just sending them off to a developer to get quotes.
Have the incubator program ever thought about kind of creating a employment kind of website or something to where you guys can reach out to students that are studying a certain subject like computer science and they're able to work with people who are starting their own businesses and stuff?
We don't have a specific database that covers all the departments, but we will we'll put internships on the internship databases at various departments all the time, and then we usually just have contact with whoever's in charge of either internships, or sometimes we use career services or people like that to, if our student wants to, if we have a student that wants an internship, or if we're looking for one, like we hire a mass comm student pretty much every year. Our grad students are all MBAs, so we get those straight from the MBA program. And then we get the engineers usually from mechanical engineering. So no, we don't have a one stop place for that, but I have a lot of resources and databases that we do use, that are mostly through LSU.
Yeah, I would think it's an amazing experience. I mean, it'd be something that's definitely a resume builder.
Oh, absolutely.
At the least.
Yep. And, you know, if we have any companies out here looking for interns also, we usually will just contact a department head or somebody over that we know in the respective department, and we can usually fill those things, no problem.
I wanted to ask, what's the most successful business that's come out of here, student based or not?
I don't know. That's it's Tough to say.
Tough question.
We have a lot, because I've been here for 5 years, and we have, since we started in 88, a lot of businesses in town.
That old.
Originally started here. Yeah, there are some. He helped Tin Roof get started. There was a lot before I came around that are now, you know, successful businesses in Baton Rouge. But just for right now, even general informatics down there building that building and being here for 10 years, they're a great success story. So by the time they kind of graduate the incubator, for lack of a better term, they'll probably be the biggest success story that I've seen since we've been here.
What is their main objective?
IT services. Okay. Yeah.
And they're trying to get pretty much involved with other corporations and be their IT services department.
Yeah, they have a lot of big
contracted out.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting, but yeah. So I think, what is your goal, I guess, in particular for your future, as far as, you know, being a business owner or being involved in the incubator program? Where do you see yourself
for the time being here
in the future?
You know, the main goal is just to find these students. You know, I want to find the cream of the crop students who are really interested in entrepreneurship and doing things. And they're all over the place. Like I said, we love engineering students. We've done a lot with music students, art students. We're working with textiles and fashion merchandising program right now. Also buying some equipment for a prototyping center and kind of starting a little fashion incubator on campus too. We've got the food incubator also. If you want to start a food product, LSU is the place to do it. The Ag Center has a food incubator that has I think 35 food products in it right now. They manufacture them all right on campus. It's a cool deal. If you haven't seen the food incubator, go check that out. You go to Calandro's or something like that, and you see tons of food incubator products. They're all at the farmer's market all the time. So definitely interested in entrepreneurship personally, and, you know, would like to own a business or something someday. But for the time being, this economic development role is a lot of fun. And being that entrepreneurship is being emphasized so much in, you know, curriculum and everyday life at LSU, it's a good time to be here. And so really, I think the interest is going to be increasing. And I'm excited for the students that are going to be coming along that are starting the entrepreneurship track right now and are going to, you know, get a solid amount of classes over the next 4 years. They've got a lot of new classes on the books. We also have, as part of the student incubator program, we have a lot of students who are writing business plans, trying to raise money, doing things while they're a full-time student that is a lot of work. I mean, I see students in here that spend as much time sitting in here writing a business plan than they do on a lot of their coursework. So now I do have two internship independent studies that I can run students through. So undergrad and graduate students, I have two sections that if you're a student in my program working on something, you can get credit for it. So you can get credit toward an entrepreneurship credit.
Nice.
Toward an entrepreneurship degree, I'm sorry, minor or major, by working with us out here, which is good because I see students put a lot of time into this in the past, especially when that venture challenge comes around. They all have to write business plans to be a part of that competition.
Do you guys help them with business plans, building it? Okay.
Yep. Yeah, the more you come meet with us, the earlier you start, the better the business plan is going to look. We do a lot of them. We've done tons of business plans. So we do financials too. We do pro forma, forward-looking financials with you. So we'll do a startup budget. We'll do financials looking forward, cash flow, income statement, balance sheet. So, I mean, these business plans that the students write for the competition, you know, you can take them to the bank. They're solid. They're really solid. So we do a lot of business plans with students.
I recently met with someone who, whose husband actually was a part of starting Waiter.
Oh yeah.
Do you guys have any affiliation or anything?
Chris
with that?
Moe, we know him pretty well. He's been part of some of our pitch competitions, and actually he's been nice enough to meet with some of our students. Also, I've had some students who are developing apps that have met with Chris just to kind of pick his brain about how to navigate the territory, especially if you're raising money or, you know, starting a riskier business. He's got some good advice. And I know one of his big things that we've already talked about is the technical co-founder thing, finding somebody who can code in the beginning. That's kind of how his story started. He started with $50,000 over in Lake Charles, and he got somebody on board early who could build his network out and develop and engineer the whole app, really. And he'll be the first one to tell you that he couldn't have done it without that. But he's very proud of, you know, building this whole thing in Louisiana and starting with a little bit of money, and now he's raised some big dollars and is worth a lot. But yeah, I know he's big on the technical co-founder side. So that's a great story, though. We love stories like that.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends who's from Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
and he noticed that a lot of people, you know, were talking about Waiter as if it was the first food delivery app or something like that. Maybe not the first, but it's like the biggest, or it's like kind of this thought process around here, or this perspective that it is the first or it is the biggest, and it's far from it, really. There's plenty all over the country that have been doing it.
Yep.
But similar to Lit Pizza, that's a newer business in the area. That also is an idea that is somewhere else as well.
Yep.
So how do you feel about businesses that not necessarily take ideas from, but they're pretty much taking ideas?
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, there's a lot of, it's kind of a new space with some of these concepts now, because there's not a lot of protection sometimes. I think that in Waiter's case, they just did a much better job than anybody else had done. I think they figured out how to really create value for the vendors, the restaurants. You know, they have some hardware in there. A lot of them have iPads and everything, but it seamlessly communicates with their point of sale. No restaurant wants to change their point of sale system. They're usually very proud of that. They come in and take free pictures of your menu, and, you know, they upload everything to this great platform that they already have. I don't know if this is true anymore, but in the beginning, Chris would always say that a majority of the restaurants would have to close once they put the Waiter system in there, because their order influx was so high that they had to completely redo their staffing and everything.
Wow.
So I think he figured out how to incentivize the restaurants. I think that before, a lot of people had this idea, there was something called Mr. Delivery, and there were a few other ones in Baton Rouge, and the margins were too slim. There was high employee turnover. Like, I think Waiter, the drivers have to work 15 hours a week, I guess. So,
minimum.
Yeah. So they have incentivized the drivers to work. You know, I think a lot of people with those other ones would just maybe sign on for an hour a week, and if they didn't get any orders, you know, they're gone. So high turnover, no incentives for the restaurants, and for the business owner, the margins are real tough.
Right.
But Waiter, I just think they did a much better job with it. I mean, it's impressive.
I feel like for the customer too, they have to kind of understand how to use Waiter, because you can't, it's not, I guess, optimal if you're doing it for just you, you're ordering for just you. Mm-hmm. It's more for, like, I hear hospitals love it.
Absolutely.
You know, different, maybe even agencies or something with multiple employees that are ordering food at the same time. It's not supposed to be for one person ordering food, but you can do that, I guess, if you're,
absolutely,
you know, one of those drunk nights.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, they've done an awesome job. That's an impressive system. But, you know, with the apps, you have to have a critical mass of either the vendors or the users also. So he did a good job getting all the restaurants on board. You know, you click on the Waiter app and they're all in one spot. He put his brand all around town on signs, and everybody started, you know, getting curious. And by the time the users started flooding in, at least in Baton Rouge, I know that was a later city. But, I mean, there was no reason to not download it and at least check it out, because, I mean, every restaurant had a Waiter sign in it for a little while, and it was a big topic. They grew quick, but they just, like I said, I've seen two of the other services I've actually seen here in Baton Rouge. Mr. Delivery came and left, and then there's one other one that was doing this in the beginning, but anyway, they just figured it out. Waiter figured it out, and it cost them some money. You know, they have significant infrastructure. They have to have an office in Baton Rouge, which, like, somebody like Uber Eats probably does not, but it's part of their business model. You know,
they're based out of Lafayette, right?
Lake Charles.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, I was talking to the guy, well, the wife of the guy that was, I can't remember how it was. I think her husband was the developer. He was like kind of like the COO of it, kind of deal, where he was like over the operations of it. But they were saying how they either want to go public or want to be sold, or I guess bought.
Yeah.
And so it's, I know that there's kind of a point in every business where it's just that decision comes along. And I don't know, you know, what, I guess, out of your experience with the student incubator and things like that, and the things that you've seen where businesses have gotten big to where they could be sold or could be bought, rather. And what's the decision there? I mean, I know if it's like something that you're passionate about and you want to see it succeed, that I can see how that could be conflicting. I guess it's person by person based, right?
Yeah. And it also, it depends on your whole path. You know, if you raise some investor dollars from an accredited investor, especially, they're going to be looking for a return. So the exit strategy is going to come up. You know, in a lot of pitches and business plans, it'll exit strategy is a big part of it. And a lot of students, you know, it just doesn't quite make sense to have an exit strategy quite yet. But usually by the time you raise money is the time that you need to have some kind of exit strategy. And if that is me graduate and run the company, that's fine. But usually those dollars are not as high risk investor dollars. Usually that's a bank loan or that's friends and family or savings or something like that. But usually by the time you get investors involved, you have to have some kind of exit strategy. And that could be a licensing deal or, you know, like you said, an acquisition or in some cases an IPO. But, you know, like I had a student product that it was a toss game a couple of years ago. And he won a couple pitch competitions around here. Won about $50,000 in just the pitch competitions, and all of that money, in his case, went to legal fees to get a licensing deal with a huge company in place. So they spent months arguing about percentages for this licensing deal, but once the deal was in place, this company literally put it in a retailer nationwide, and he sat home and collected mailbox money, like we like to say. But he was passionate about that business, but he knew that his end goal had to be something like that. You know, he couldn't be peddling this thing around stores nationwide. He needed the network. He needed the distributor. So he knew that the licensing deal made sense to him. And so he put all his time and resources into getting that thing inked. And we've seen companies get bought too. You know, if it makes sense and if it's in a good space, we've seen them get bought where the founder stays on. In most cases, the founder can stay on and be involved. If they don't want to do that, we've also seen the other where the company's just sold. But usually with student companies, when we see outside investors start getting involved, there needs to be some kind of exit strategy because they want their money back.
Yeah. And I know we talked about funding before, but you know, what is the biggest conflict or not conflict, but obstacle that you've seen, you know, a student or your average student entrepreneur go through in this process?
Usually it's either the business model is kind of like something more of a lifestyle business where they want to be involved. And this is something that, like you said, they're passionate about it. It's hard. That's a tough sell to investors. We don't have a great landscape of investors down here anyway, but investors want scalable growth and a growth plan. So, you know, if you're not going to scale this thing and get them their money back, even investors like Innovation Catalyst, who's nonprofit, they're not going to be as involved as somebody expecting a big return to their board. But, you know, they need their money back. So it's a lot of times it's either the idea is not scalable enough and not far enough down the entrepreneurial process to be investor ready. Or like I said earlier, if you have to go to a traditional bank, you need collateral and you need money down now. So really, like I said, our venture challenge is not a whole lot of money, but it's our attempt at kind of combating having to go into those places empty handed, you know. It's just tough for students to raise money, and it's tough to do it here. If you have a good business model and you've got some financials, you know, maybe you've got a little bit of bridge funding behind it, 10 grand or so to come up with maybe a really good executive summary, and get yourself, you know, ready to go around and pitch. We've seen students raise money that way too. We've seen students spend money on creating a really professional looking kind of investor packet, And then go use the rest of the money to travel around and actually talk to these people. And sometimes it takes years. A lot of times the company will be cash flowing somewhere in a space that is not where you expected or wanted it to be at the time, but you've got a cash flow before you get that investment chunk. And so we've seen that with a lot of student businesses, is they'll kind of do anything, take any job, hit any industry to cash flow, and then keep using that money to talk to people in places that they want to be and continue to sell their whole concept. And eventually they raise money.
I know you said particularly here to raise money, but is it really, or I guess I should say, is it worth moving to another state to start a business?
I don't know about that. It's just, I mean, really traditionally, even on paper, the numbers are just investment dollars don't flow as much as they do in other. I mean, even go to Austin or something like that, it's just easier to raise money, especially for tech businesses, you know. But yeah, that is a valid point. It's tougher here to raise those kind of dollars. There's just not as many places to start, really. So I don't know. I'm not sure that it's worth moving. I think that would depend on the concept and the industry. You know, if it's some kind of software idea that is capital intensive in the beginning and you know you need programming partners and stuff like that, you know, I've had students move to San Francisco, you know, to go try to raise this money. I had one that was just texting me the other day. He's out there trying to raise a couple million for a software idea that he was just kind of striking out around here. He took advantage of a lot of resources around here. He raised money here, but he eventually packed up and moved.
As far as being based from here, it's pretty good though with like taxes, right? Or is it?
Yeah, there's a lot of.
I mean, versus San Francisco, surely.
Absolutely, absolutely, and there's a lot of incentives here too, digital media tax credits and things like that. We've had a lot of companies take advantage of that.
R&D,
not so much students. Yeah. Because you know you got to spend money to take advantage of a lot of that stuff. So a lot of those are non-student companies, but yeah, Louisiana, the digital media tax credits and some of those other incentives have been huge, and we work pretty closely with LED, Louisiana Economic Development. So if we have somebody that we think can take advantage of those things, we know who to call.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing I really wanted to ask was just, you know, as far as advice for any student that's trying to start their own business, I know obviously going to you is certainly the first move, but maybe even someone who has an idea who's like, I don't know if I would like want to pursue it. I mean, with your idea with a food boat, right? I mean, that was something that you probably battled with, maybe kind of was like, I don't know. Or did you just get it? Or did you just get after it?
I mean, I thought about it for a little while. But I definitely saw the opportunity. You know, it lived up there forever, and it really was a resort town that got really busy in the summer. So our population would go from like 3,000 year round to like
so there was a need
100,000 in the summer. Yeah. Lots of money travels up there in the summer, and so yeah, we saw the need. Everybody drags their boats up there, spends all their hard earned money on fuel and things like that, and are up there on vacation spending money. So kind of saw that. But as far as advice, with students, non-students, any entrepreneur, even people that are solving problems, you have to talk to your customers. You know, we run that iCore program that I talked about, and that's really all that is focused on, is finding a market, product market fit for a technology. You know, a lot of people think that they have the best thing in the world and everybody needs it. They haven't really talked to their customers. They may think this is a solution to a problem that's out there. The problem might not even exist, or the solution might not be focusing on something that whoever is dealing with the problem or pain cares about. You know, they may not care about saving money. They may care about saving time, or, you know, the opposite. They may not care about how long something takes to do as long as it's accurate or something like that. So, you know, I see a lot of students who, with apps too, it relates back to that too. You know, they think that they have this solution on an app and they want to pour a bunch of money into it and they think everyone's going to use it. That's usually not the case. And a lot of times the target market for something may be totally wrong too. So you got to get out the building and go talk to some of these users, even if they're not end users or customers. Talk to people in the space, talk to stakeholders, talk to people in the industry, figure out what their pain points are and figure out how you can solve them. And, you know, you can monetize it that way. We see a lot of people that are putting a lot of time and effort into something that, you know, might not even be a real industry problem because they haven't gotten out and talked to people. And that's what a lot of this stuff focuses on. So actually this I-Corps program that's run by the National Science Foundation has helped with our overall mindset with consulting too, because it forces you to figure out the feasibility of this and whether or not you're working on something that somebody's going to use before you start a company. A startup is different than a large company. It's not a small version of a large company. It's somebody who's searching for a market and searching for the correct solution that somebody will pay for. And so that's what a lot of times, even outside of the I-Corps program, just in a consulting realm, I'll have a student come talk to me about an idea. And, you know, we're not here to judge the idea so much. We're here to make you think about it a different way. We can certainly poke holes in it, but a lot of times I'll just tell students, you know, have you talked to anybody about this? Yeah, you know, I've talked to some of my friends or something, and that's okay. But you want to talk to people you don't know, people that don't look like you, people who you think probably need this. Make them tell you that. You know, don't go tell them, this is what I have, this is why you need it. Say, what's the biggest pain point throughout your work day? If you're in an industry that solves a problem for a specific person, you know, go ask them what they're with inventory, for example. What is your biggest hurdle or problem daily? What's your biggest pain point? What costs you the most time or money? And get them to say, yeah, you know, this takes way too much time. If I had a solution that did this a lot faster, I'd have more time to do this, and it would save me overall dollars. You need to get customers to say that. You know, we have a lot of, and faculty are just as guilty at this. You know, faculty, LSU faculty will be working on something and in their lab for 5 years and, you know, may think it's the best thing ever and everybody needs it. They got grad students working on it. They're putting money into it and it may not solve a real problem. You know, it may not be something that somebody out in the field needs, and they're famous for not talking to these people, you know, and by the time they do and they don't sell it and they get feedback from the customer, maybe they're not focusing on the right problem.
Right.
So we see that a lot, but talking to customers is huge. I mean, before you put any dollars into anything, and before you come up with your plan, because your plan should be tailored around what they say. So we've seen that a lot. As far as feasibility, you can get a lot done by going to talk to people.
Right.
It's free. It's no fun a lot of times. You're going to get a lot of no's. It's not the most fun process in the world. It's hard to find people to talk to, but you're going to get those few eventually that, you know, either make it worth it or not.
It's hard, but it's much easier than it was, I feel, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, we talked about this last time on the podcast, so I know I'm kind of repeating myself, but how easy it is to network with people nowadays with social media, LinkedIn, things like that.
Yep.
Just you're able to easily talk to people. And I know Natalie talked about last time how she would be more than happy to help out someone who is trying to start an idea, or even a student or a young entrepreneur, anybody who has an idea, who wants to start something and is determined to solve that problem. Maybe not even solve the problem. I think another thing that people that have ideas for businesses or want to own their own business, they get caught up in the idea of, oh, someone already thought of that. It's like, so what? They need competitors. Like, you know, I mean, think about Lyft or Uber. I mean, they both of them do the same thing. They both solve the same problem, but they both exist because they're competing against each other. And so I feel like a lot of people will just make that excuse of, oh, I didn't pursue that business opportunity because it already exists. You know, it's just, I think that's a silly excuse.
Yeah. I think it, again, just goes back to market. If you have a market for it, and you're a similar or same solution, but in a different market or a different place or whatever, I think that's totally valid. But it just boils down to talking to customers again. If you've got people willing to pay for it, you know, it, it's definitely an opportunity there. But yeah, I agree that if it's a different market and a different customer, there's lots of opportunities for things like that.
Totally. Well, I think that's it. That's a good place to end. So
awesome.
Thanks so much, man.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And
anyone listening wants to start a business, come talk to Kenny
please
Anderson.
Please come contact me. Yes. Yeah. Google the LSU Innovation Park. There's a student services tab on there. If you are a student, you can see what we do for students. There's all kinds of email links and everything, phone numbers on there. But please come check out the student incubator in the LSU Innovation Park if you're interested in anything that you've heard today.
Awesome. Till next time, guys. Thank you.